How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day. Hey there, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today, that includes a conversation about basketball, because basketball is back, sort of, in a way. The Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers got together to play their first preseason game in Amherst at UMass. Joining me today, while Jay King diligently works on his post-game work for MassLive.com. By all means, go to MassLive.com to check that out. So Jam Packard is joining me today to break down the Celtics preseason loss to the Philadelphia 76ers. Sam, oh no, they lost to the Sixers? All hope is lost.
I stopped paying attention to the score right about the middle of the third quarter because it stopped being kind of a real basketball game. I stopped taking notes. I realized that this is summer league, that basically just summer league, and I don't need to pay attention anymore. But it was great to have basketball back.
Yeah, that was about the time where everything kind of fell apart. Once I saw that the starters were mostly done, then we realized that was going to be the end of any sort of real basketball. But let's start at the beginning. Because after the first quarter, I was ready to declare the Celtics are going to win 62 games this season and Al Horford was going to be the MVP. Immediate impact by Al Horford to come out there the first few plays, a couple of pick and rolls, actually a couple of pick and pops. First one, pick and pop, hits the mid-range jumper. Second one, pick and pop, defender overreacts, puts the ball on the floor, gets to the rim. Then he grabs a rebound, which he grabbed a bunch of rebounds. Actually, officially, he grabbed 8 rebounds tonight. 8 points, 8 rebounds for Horford in 15 minutes. Grabs a rebound, brings the ball up the court himself, starts a sequence of events that ends with an Avery Bradley 3. And immediately you're like, yes, he is so much better for this team. Wow, this is great.
It was amazing just because all the talk all offseason about how much better he's going to make this team, that he's the best big man that Brad Stevens has ever had, and it just all came true in the first 3 minutes. It was wild how much of an impact he had. And that first time he got the rebound and pushed it on a fast break, you just thought to yourself, wow, this guy's he's going to be something special, and he's going to make this team so much more dangerous on offense. Just the fact that they had a big man who can start the fast break like that and just – while the entire Celtics starting lineup was getting out and running, but just the fact that he's the guy who can start the fast break from that position, it was impressive. And it's just, I had the same kind of overreaction you did. I said the Celtics were going to win the Nobel Prize for winning. It's just like, it was amazing to see how good that first unit was on defense and on offense.
They have that now. They did. They just put that in this season, the Nobel Prize for winning.
I know, just because Al Horford made them do it.
Yeah, yeah, that's a new thing. So I really loved the immediate impact that he had. You got to see how comfortable he was with Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas really didn't do a ton, although he scored 11 points in classic Isaiah Thomas fashion. It's like, oh, Isaiah didn't play, didn't do much. He's 11 points in 19 minutes. So he was tied. No, wait. Terry Rozier actually was the leading scorer with 12 points. But so he, Bradley, and Crowder all had 11. But you saw that comfort immediately with Thomas and Horford. And Horford just making the right plays, not just rebounding, not just scoring, but passing, finding guys, not easy passes either, but finding Crowder, starting the ball, but that by the end, you had Mike Gorman saying, wow, great ball movement, but it started with Al Horford. So those are the things that we can look forward to. And I know this was the 76ers and it's the first preseason game, but the level of chemistry that they've already shown this quickly, I think bodes well.
Oh, absolutely. And just seeing how dangerous the offense could be when you're playing, when you have that pick and roll of Thomas and Horford at the top and Bradley and Crowder are shooters available. Where did Jay Crowder learn to catch and shoot? Is this a new development? I thought it was amazing. It's something I don't remember seeing that much last year, but in the beginning of this game, he knocked down, I think it was his first two threes. He was amazing. That's just not a skill I remember him seeing. And maybe it's just rust in my watching basketball abilities. Nope. But do you remember that catch and shoot?
That's new. That was new. I saw that and I immediately tweeted it. And I was like, this is that quick release, that quick catch and shoot release was a very nice new development to see. He shot 3 of 6 from three. That's huge. Obviously, he's not going to shoot 50% from the field and 50% from three from the season for the season. But it was nice to see that little development, because usually he is a little bit more of a wind up kind of guy. So that was good to see him catch and shoot real quick, super quick release. And just to be out there as a threat, taking 6 3-pointers, that's huge. Avery Bradley took 7. They each hit 3. So, and Bradley, again, as a first quarter guy, Mike Gorman had a great comment during the broadcast that Avery Bradley's the best first quarter scorer in the NBA. So that continued. And he led the team. Actually, let's talk about Avery Bradley for a second, because more than the scoring, he had 6 assists to lead the team. And he had some really nice plays where he was patient and waited for defenses to react and then made the pass. He was handling the ball a lot more. In the past, Avery Bradley putting the ball on the floor and dribbling a bunch was a recipe for disaster. And tonight, it was a little more calm, a little more patient, and it paid off.
If Avery Bradley can be anything of kind of that second facilitator playmaker, it's going to open up things for this Celtics offense, because we saw last year Isaiah Thomas do some amazing things when he was off the ball. And you're right, Avery Bradley normally – I tweeted something about him about this exact subject, and people tweeted back at me that, well, Avery Bradley's a terrible passer, or he's always a turnover pro when he dribbles. And if he can just be a reasonable like combo guard and able to create plays, it's going to make just I think Isaiah Thomas a lot more an efficient scorer. There was one play early in the second quarter where Horford got the rebound, pushed it up the court, dribble handoff right to Avery Bradley, who kind of penetrated and then kicked to a wide open Isaiah, who hit the three. And it just kind of made me go, this offense has such potential right now. And I know we're going to have to say this after every point. Preseason 76ers, not a big deal, but it was just fun to see kind of Avery Bradley. It's fun to see each new wrinkle that the players clearly worked on in the offseason. It's our first chance to see these things. So if they can do that moving forward, it's going to be exciting.
Here's the thing that we really have to try to focus on. It's not necessarily the results as far as shots going in or not going in. It's about these guys being comfortable with each other on the floor. And there were some instances where there were turnovers, where a pass was a little bit behind a guy, or the spacing wasn't quite right. That's something that's going to happen at this point of the season. It's going to happen throughout the season to a degree, but especially early on. But continuity, the ability to move, run the offense, work the ball around the perimeter, get the defense into rotation. These are the things that you're looking for. Can these guys pass, cut, set picks, get shots that are open shots, get opportunities to score, whether they make or miss, whether things necessarily go right or wrong? It's about the process of that offense. And tonight, I think that offense, again, granted, it's the 76ers, but at least that offense looked like it didn't look like it was the first preseason game for them, at least for the starters. And that's really an important thing, that they have a level of comfort with each other where they can go out there and create good opportunities. Now, we'll see if that can continue. Again, last preseason, there was a certain level of continuity where we felt comfortable with David Lee running the offense through the high post. So we have to bring ourselves back a little bit. But the fact that these guys are out there playing and moving as well as they did in that first quarter, that offense looked like it was December and not October. So that's encouraging.
And I think you can say the same thing for the defense, is that kind of the Al Horford, I think Scal made a couple comments about he was flying around back there and covering everyone. The defense, it was as you expected. Jake, like, you can't pass, make weak side passes, or they're going to try to deflect every single pass into the post. And that was at the top level that you kind of expected. But again, like you're saying, this team needs to mesh together. So to have that, both that cohesion on offense and cohesion on defense, is a good sign, especially in the first preseason game. But the question is, we didn't see that at all, really, from the second unit. And is it a question of that the first unit is just that much better than it was in the past, or the second unit's worse, or how do you make that comparison?
It's important to note that right now, Kelly Olynyk is still not healthy, and neither is Gerald Green, but Olynyk to a much higher degree, because you, I, Jay King, have all said the same thing, that we think Olynyk is a better option as a starter than Amir Johnson is. Now, whether that actually is the case, we'll see. But even if it's not, even if Olynyk comes in off the bench, you saw tonight that Amir was subbed out early. He only played 15 minutes. And it's interesting that Marcus Smart was the first guy in, and they brought out a big. They went small immediately. We can get to that in a second, but that Olynyk isn't there, and that Olynyk is supposed to be a pretty key piece that's going to be about a 30-minute-per-night guy, I think. That's a huge thing, because if he's the starter, then Amir comes off the bench, and that changes the second unit a lot. And if Gerald Green actually comes in and is a piece that can be relied upon, that changes the second unit a lot. So I don't want to put too much stock in what the second unit did necessarily tonight, because there was a lot of Tyler Zeller, where there probably won't be much Tyler Zeller in the future. And there was some Jonas Jerebko at the three, which won't necessarily happen. He's more going to be a four for this team. There's a lot more James Young, which we'll talk about in a minute. I don't know where that's going to go, but I doubt he's going to get this kind of time moving forward. So the second unit was kind of a hodgepodge. I think the focus right now should be more on the first unit and how they worked. And if you pull Amir Johnson out of that first unit and put Kelly Olynyk in, I think that just makes things even better spacing-wise offensively. Amir was okay, but he really didn't do much tonight. I think if you put Olynyk in there and you put Amir Johnson in as your backup center, that changes the entire dynamic of what the second unit does.
Yeah, I thought Amir Johnson did a decent job on defense, and you can kind of see the value of having him and Horford back there, just the ability to kind of switch both four and fives and have them guard either. So there are sometimes Horford was on Embiid, and sometimes Johnson was. But you're right, on offense, he really didn't do anything, and I think if they're trying to have like kind of the more offensively efficient lineup, they're going to see Olynyk there. Now, we'll see how that plays out with the second unit, because, I know, again, not reading into anything, but if the second unit struggles, you may want to consider putting Olynyk back there just to put more shooting. I just think it's going to be early on. Brad Stevens is just going to mix and match everything, and it might be actually be a situation where it's matchup dependent. You mentioned going small. That was one of my notes as well, when they brought in Marcus Smart as the first guy off the bench in for Amir Johnson. I love that. I think that lineup with Crowder at the four, the three guards, and Horford is going to be one of their most dynamic and kind of high-intensity lineups this year. That's really going to change the game. So I thought that was great. I was really excited to see Stevens kind of go to that early.
Yeah, before we continue here, I want to remind everybody, if you're not a subscriber to the podcast, if this is your first time in, however you got here, first of all, thank you. Second of all, subscribe to the show. Go to iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, the TuneIn app, wherever you get your podcast, subscribe, search for Locked On Celtics, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating. If you are a subscriber and you haven't rated us, please do that. It really helps boost our rankings and get the word out. Just found out today that this podcast has made the top 200 podcasts on iTunes. So we're rolling with the big boys. We're in the top,
hey now.
We're in the top 200 on iTunes. We're in there with all the big ESPN podcasts. So Locked On Celtics, we're out there. Give us that 5-star rating. Tell people about it. Let's get us up into the top 100. Why not? So I just want to put that word out there and say thank you to everybody who's been listening and subscribing and telling your friends. Thank you very much. Okay. So here we are. We'll see what the Olynyk, however they use Olynyk, I'm sure Brad Stevens is going to be much more intelligent about how they use Olynyk than we are. But as much as I've advocated for him starting, I can see where you're going with this. I can see the Amir Johnson as a starter, like you said, switching, and now you've got Olynyk. Maybe Olynyk's the first guy off the bench, and then you work in Smart and Rozier, and now you've got a second unit that can score a little bit better. So, and that spacing for Olynyk on the second unit does the same thing that it does for the first unit, and maybe it's more necessary for a guy like Rozier or Smart so they can get to the rim a little easier. Isaiah Thomas can get to the rim no matter what. So if you're looking for an alternative theory, then Olynyk off the bench, maybe that could work. So hopefully the first thing is that Olynyk comes back soon, is healthy, and they can figure out the rotation. So on to the second unit, Marcus Smart. I got to say, Marcus needs to chill out a little bit. Not that I don't love his fire, and I guess he's not going to chill out, but seeing him diving out of bounds and freaking out in the last 30 seconds of a close preseason game at the beginning of October, it just, like, preserve yourself, man. Just let's save it for the regular season or something.
There literally is not a second speed. It's full speed all the time.
It's unbelievable.
There's nothing you can do about it.
I mean, this is the guy that was diving and hurt himself in summer league last summer. So I know it's an unrealistic thing to ask, but man, that guy just hates to lose. He's always going 100%. When you hear somebody like Horford, and we mentioned this in the last podcast, when Horford says Smart sets the tone, that's why. He's just out there just going nuts. But I think Smart did all right tonight. He didn't hit a three. He was 0 for 3. And that's one thing that we're always looking for, Vance and that fire. And he helped lead the charge towards the end. For me, the game was in two parts. Well, we could say three parts. The first quarter, which kind of mattered because it was all the starters. The second quarter through third quarter, which didn't really matter because it was just a pile of crap. And then the fourth quarter where the Celtics were down and Brad Stevens decided to play Rozier and Smart down the stretch, the last 8 minutes of the game. I kind of liked that. It's surprising a little bit, but I kind of liked that because it gave those guys an opportunity to come from behind, which they almost did. So let's get into that part. I think Smart was nice down the stretch. His defense, he forced a turnover late to give the Celtics an opportunity down three to tie the game. That's just Marcus being a bulldog. Terry Rozier had a nice night. And Jaylen Brown, just highlights galore.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown, I think, is going to be the king of garbage time dunks. I think he's just going to do that all year, and everyone's just going to be like, why doesn't he get more playing time? He needs to play. Look what he can do. And it's just going to be him like taking advantage of kind of lazy defenders. So it's exciting to see, and I understand it. But it was, of course, he's like does all these spectacular things like once the game's kind of out of reach. What I really wanted to talk about was Terry Rozier and kind of there. It was two Terry Roziers. We saw him kind of more hesitant in the first quarter. And I think Terry Rozier seems to be like a player who needs to have that first shot go in to have kind of play with more confidence. It seemed like when he was coming around on pick and rolls, he would initially do the pull up. And if that first one doesn't go in, then he's not really coming as hard around those pick and rolls. He's not going to go to the hoop. And then in the second half, it seemed like he was a little bit more aggressive, and that really opened everything up, for him offensively, allowed him to make, kind of more passes and just create more offense. And I was actually more impressed with his ability to kind of run the offense and facilitate than I was with Marcus Smart. And that was kind of the big thing I was looking at, is like, who's going to take the lead as that kind of that leader of the second unit in terms of facilitating. And I think right now I'd be leaning towards Rozier, especially after tonight's performance.
Yeah. And another thing that we need to consider when it comes to their performances, these are not situations they would normally be in, because normally down the stretch, if Rozier and Smart are in the game at any point in the fourth quarter, they're on the floor with Jay Crowder, Al Horford, Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas, like one of those guys, two or three of those guys actually are going to be on the floor with them. So they're going to be playing with better guys. They're not counting on Jordan Mickey to take a game tying three. They're not counting on James Young, who again had a nice night, but they're not counting on him to make shots. And Jaylen Brown may not be on the floor in those situations. So they're playing with better players. So that just means when Terry Rozier has the ball in his hand and he's running a play or running a pick and roll, he's running it with Al Horford or Crowder, an all-star player, a potential all-star player. And he's got Bradley, a really good three-point shooter, or Isaiah Thomas, or somebody that's really competent on the three-point line that demands respect, that gives him a little bit more room on the floor. So, yeah, tonight, Rozier, I think, made some mistakes, read a couple of plays wrong. He may have tried to force a couple of things, but also, he did show some good things. He had a nice little stretch where we saw that summer league guy making some better decisions, taking, like you said, being more aggressive, getting to the rim, taking stronger jumpers, not hesitating on his jump shot. I think when you put everything together in that second unit, that real second unit, when everybody's healthy and playing well, I think he becomes a little bit better. So I'm encouraged by what Rozier was doing tonight. I'm not worried about whatever Smart's production was, but I think that Rozier showed enough that he can be a competent backup and a guy that can bring the ball up the floor. And I think with better players around him, I think he's really going to show a little bit more of what he can do.
Yeah, and the key is just kind of maintaining that aggressiveness. And I think that it's going to be something that Stevens is yelling at him the entire year. And I think if he continues to get results, that he's better when he's more aggressive, his teammates are going to be basically telling him to keep doing that. And I think it's generally a good sign for the Celtics that's like one of the major adjustments he has to make, is just whether or not like to push it towards the rim. So it's not like he's wildly missing jump shots, and he's like kind of a sneaky good 3-point shooter. No one really talks about him for that ability, but he's a great, especially catch and shoot 3-point shooter. You think of him as this elite athlete, this elite leaper, and this really quick guy. But in terms of guards, he's right there after Bradley and Thomas in terms of 3-point shooters.
Yeah. So let's look at, I think, now the competition, because this is what we do on our podcasts. This is what we do when you're diehard. The competition for that 15 spot. James Young got a lot more time than RJ Hunter, twice as much time almost as RJ Hunter. RJ Hunter did not look good tonight. Missed a couple of open shots, chances to put the Celtics either tie the game or put them ahead, and he missed. Meanwhile, James Young, 3 for 3, 7 points. He was a minus 11, but that's not, not a big deal, at least in this situation. He got 15 minutes. He was solid. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, James, I've been joking around that James Young should be learning Cantonese. And it looks like he's now ahead in the race for that coveted 15th spot. And RJ Hunter is going to be looking to join somebody somewhere not in the United States.
Well, if James Young bought any Cantonese tech books, he can just give them to RJ Hunter for kind of a discount right now. RJ Hunter looked, I know he got 8 minutes, But there was one shot where he had a wide open three, and that's supposed to be his entire role as a player. He's the three-point specialist. He's the guy who can shoot. That's why you drafted him. That's why he made that great tournament run with Georgia State. And he just kind of looked scared to take the shot, like he already knew he was going to be cut. And I know this is reading into it big time, but the fact that James Young was kind of the next guy off the bench after the first unit and second unit played made me think that Stevens is trying to get more of a look from it. And James Young didn't do anything terribly impressive. I think he made a layup or two, and that one shot he did hit was kind of ugly. It was like a step back off the wrong foot. But just for the very fact that he's getting into the game and seems to be garner more trust from Stevens than Hunter is a bad sign for RJ Hunter, who really hasn't shown anything in his entire NBA career except for a couple of like nice passes back last season.
Yeah, I've been an unabashed Hunter guy. I like what he has shown in the past. I swear that jumper should be falling. I swear it should be falling, right? But I don't know. But I like his decision making ability on the floor. I've always thought that when he's had the ball in his hands and the play is evolving, that he makes good decisions. But I don't know. Something's up with that. And I don't want to read too much into it. But what the hell? If we're not going to read too much into it, why are we doing a podcast?
If we had to watch the entire fourth quarter of that basketball game, we're going to have to bring some analysis to it.
That's right. I didn't watch that crap for nothing. That explains my entire blogging career. I didn't watch that for nothing, so I'm going to write something about this. We watched it. We're going to talk about it. So, look, James Young, we'll see. It's early. Just could have been a thing. Maybe in the next game, Hunter gets 20 minutes and Young doesn't get any.
Yeah, that could easily be the thing, is that Stevens is just messing with us, and he knows Stevens listens to the Locked On Celtics podcast, and he's just going to be laughing to himself on his way back to his home tonight after he listens to this.
He's sitting there waiting for this to download so he can screw with us in practice the next day. That's what he's doing. And the Jaylen Brown, I do want to say that it just, I liked his ability. He's exactly what we thought he was going to be. That when he got guys off balance, and we saw a couple of little up fakes where he drew the defender was coming at him hard. He threw a little head and shoulder fake, and the defender overreacted, and then boom, he's right at the rim. He tried to decapitate, I think it was Joel Embiid, early on, like the first missed dunk. And Embiid got him, he blocked the dunk. But, I mean, that was like a message sent that he was going to go after everybody. And then he showed an ability to get lesser defenders off balance and get to the rim. So those lesser defenders are going to be harder to come by in the regular season when you're playing better teams, when you're playing deeper teams, when you go and face the top-notch teams with actual NBA players on their bench. That's not going to be as easy, but when he finds himself in those situations and he can make a defender overreact, then he has that supreme athletic ability to get to the rim and do something. When he doesn't have to think, when he can just go out there and play, he's going to be pretty good. It's the actual half-court NBA basketball that's going to be something he has to figure out. But he even had a nice little shimmy, step-away, baseline jumper that went in early in the game. So, you know, there's some positives there with him too.
Yeah, and it's as if Terry Rozier's listening. Jay King just tweeted out from the locker room, once the game slows down for Jaylen Brown, it's going to be scary for a lot of people. So it's exactly what you're saying. Once he like is able to kind of make those decisions and not just use his athleticism, it Mojin like kind of makes that kind of mental leap, he's going to be amazing. I think it was interesting when he did kind of make those amazing plays. I think it was when the Celtics were in a smaller lineup and he was playing at the power forward. And that seems like the perfect position for him to, if he's playing against larger defenders, to kind of use that elite speed and athleticism to kind of explode by them. And I think that's going to be where he's the most useful, and where you kind of can exploit his talents the most is when he's playing against someone who's bigger than him. You can do that. And then if he's playing against somewhere smaller than him, we saw him do that, the kind of post up earlier in the game. So he's going to be a dangerous player. I just don't know if that happens this season.
Yeah, that's going to take some time. But he does have that uncanny athletic ability to just, when the opportunity presents itself, that he can make something happen.
His dunks are so violent. That's the best part. It's just like he looks like he's trying to physically bring down the rim.
Yes, yes. He's not gentle with it. He's attacking the rim. It's not quite Russell Westbrook ferocity, but it's somewhere. If Russell Westbrook's a 10, he's somewhere around 7.5 or an 8.
It might be the same ferocity. It's just Russell Westbrook looks so much more impressive because he's a tiny man compared to Jaylen. Yeah.
I don't know. I think when Westbrook attacks the rim, it's like the rim owes him money. It's really violent. It's really bad.
And Westbrook has that like patented scowl on his face after the game. Everything's so angrier.
And I think when Westbrook does it, it's so often on a breakaway or opportunities where you can just build up so much speed. But let's wrap things up. Before we wrap it up, though, let's talk a little bit about the debut of one Joel Embiid, who played 13 minutes. Let's just, as NBA fans, take a look at this. Joel Embiid actually played minutes in a 76ers jersey against another team and lived to tell the tale. And he showed some pretty nice stuff. I mean, he showed some range. He showed some really nice moves in the post. And I haven't been the biggest Embiid guy all along. But so far, I think he's shown at least some promise. I think if you're a Philly fan, you at least have something to latch onto there.
Yeah, he wasn't terrible. You expect someone with coming off of 2.5 years of not playing basketball to kind of have some rust. But you saw the glimmers of hope. But there was some, like, Sixers fans are crazy, man. There is already some Vine compilations of the three plays. The three plays he made in the game. He only made three shots, and there's already compilations, and he had a block. And it's like, I get it, but he had one nice post move. He made one long jumper, and then he got some rebounds and made some blocks. I thought it was interesting, though, that the Celtics decided to double him, which is interesting for a guy that young to kind of command a double team that early. Embiid did not handle it well. Don't get me wrong. He was not, I think he had two turnovers off two double teams, but it's just interesting that kind of that's how much Stevens respected his ability to score in the paint.
See, I disagree there. I disagree that it's his respected his ability. I think it's the first part that you said that he doesn't handle them well. And if you're the Sixers, strategically, if you're playing the Sixers and their best option is to throw it into Embiid and watch him try to score, you double the hell out of him. Not just because he's got a pretty nice offensive game and he can score one-on-one. It's that he doesn't know what the hell to do with double teams yet, and he's going to be pretty bad when that happens. And until he learns how to handle those, you just rush him every single time, right? Because that's a big weakness for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. It kind of serves both purposes, is that you send the extra defender so he's not going to beat you in the post, and then he's more likely to turn it over. It doesn't help that he has just a horrible excuse for a team around him. Sergio Rodriguez, TJ McConnell, who's going to play point guard with Simmons out? I was just kind of marveling at how bad this 76ers roster is. And then you saw them try to separate Embiid and Noel, and then they're going to try and bring back Okafor into this rotation. It made zero sense. At least with Simmons in there, you kind of could imagine this point forward, this giant lineup of it may work, but without Simmons, it's just a bunch of big guys and Nick Stauskas.
Yeah, they're not going to be a good team. They're a terrible team. But I will say that Embiid defensively changed a lot of shots. He's a huge, huge, huge person. He is a very large individual.
Did you see the picture of his hands around the basketball?
No, I haven't. I'm sure it's ridiculous.
It covers like 2/3 of the basketball. It was gross, but it was like impressive at the same time. It looked like it belonged in a museum of sorts.
I'm sure it's not Boban-esque, but
it's close to Boban.
Is it really?
It's approaching Boban, is what I would say.
Wow. Wow.
I suggest all the listeners go out and just look at the Google Joel Embiid basketball hands, and it's impressive.
It's just funny to see him stand next to a big guy like Al Horford, and you're like, man, Al doesn't look that big next to Embiid. Embiid's a very, very large individual. So, and he does seem to move well, and he's, if he can hit long distance, he hit a shot tonight that was a step inside from three. I know pregame he was hitting him from way out. If he's going to be that big and if he can step out and be a 3-point threat, then that's going to be dangerous. But right now that Philly lineup is still a bit of a mess. I don't think they're anywhere close. They're probably still a bottom five team at this point. So, but hey, from a Philly perspective, you got something to hang your hat on. And hopefully for them, Simmons can come back. But as I've said on this show before, I don't give a shit. I hate Philly. I hate everything that they've done. I've hated their whole tanking strategy. I hope it all blows up in their face. So whatever. It's nice from an NBA perspective. I like to see good young players do good things, and I don't want anybody to get hurt. So I hope Ben Simmons comes back, and I hope he does well, but not so well that the Sixers are any good ever. So just throw that out there.
I hope he does well individually, but collectively as a team, I hope they all fail repeatedly.
Exactly. I hope that this whole thing, the whole hinky plan, just continues to collapse. I hope everything just goes to crap the whole way through, and they don't win more than 20 games for the next 5 years. That's my hope for Philly. So that said, I'll be in Philly in a couple of months to watch the Celtics play them in December. So Philly fans, come say hi.
Hey, I'm in Philly right now, so I'll say hi definitely, and I'll deal with all these miserable people who couldn't care less about the 76ers because Carson Wentz exists now.
Oh, God. You know, I think Philly fans are the worst, so sorry.
I've been here.
Nice people, I'm sure.
I've been here 6 weeks. Even that fact's debatable. I've been here 6 weeks, and I could say the same thing.
I'm going to have to wear, like, a fake mustache and a wig just in case anybody Googles me, puts a wanted poster up, put my headphones on, cover up my ears. All right. That's it. That'll do it. Hey, look, fun. Sam, fun to talk about basketball here. It's nice to see the guys get up and down the floor. And I think this is just a relief after all of the podcasts that we've done to be talking about actual ball going through the hoop basketball. It's nice.
So much better than stories from training camp about the kind of quotes that Al Horford said. Like we could do that for 1 or 2 days, but on the fourth day, it was not great.
It's enough. It's enough. We actually have like some analysis to go through. So tomorrow we'll hear from the guys a little bit. Jay King will be back tomorrow to talk about just the things that he saw and the things that he heard. So you'll get another perspective on the game from him. I will not be here tomorrow, so it'll be Jay and Jam with the Celtics on the Locked On Celtics podcast again. Subscribe, please. If this is your first time listening, go ahead and subscribe. We guarantee you, I personally guarantee you, that you will enjoy just about every show, or I will give you your money back. And subscribe to the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. We got Locked On NBA, which is a very great way for you to get the full perspective of the league. It's nice to you can download that, you can put it on in your car, drive to work. You get the full NBA perspective. You can impress your friends, your coworkers at work. You listen to the Locked On Celtics at lunch. You've got us all covered. Boom, done. And if you like fantasy, you got Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Subscribe to that as well. As always, rate us 5 stars wherever it is you get your podcast. Those ratings help us a lot. They spread the word. They raise us up in the rankings. It gets the word out, and it validates my existence. So by all means, please do that. And be sure to tune in next time. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.